Chapter 40. Public Places. At noon we went on board another steamboat, and reached the village of Lachin, 9 miles from Montreal, by 3 o'clock. There, we left the river, and went on by land. Montreal is pleasantly situated on the margin of the St. Lawrence, and is backed by some bold heights, about which there are charming rides and drives. The streets are generally narrow and irregular, as in most French towns of any age, but in the more modern parts of the city, they are wide and airy. They display a great variety of very good shops, and both in the town and suburbs there are many excellent private dwellings. The granite quays are remarkable for their beauty, solidity, and extent. There is a very large Catholic cathedral here, recently erected with 2 tall spires, of which one is yet unfinished. In the open space in front of this edifice, stands a solitary, grim-looking, square brick tower, which has a quaint and remarkable appearance, and which the wiseacres of the place have consequently determined to pull down immediately. The government house is very superior to that at Kingston, and the town is full of life and bustle. In one of the suburbs, is a plank road not footpath 5 or 6 miles long, and a famous road it is too. All the rides in the vicinity were made doubly interesting by the bursting out of spring, which is here so rapid, that it is but a day's leap from barren winter, to the blooming youth of summer. The steamboats to Quebec perform the journey in the night. That is to say, they leave Montreal at 6 in the evening, and arrive at Quebec at 6 next morning. We made this excursion during our stay in Montreal, which exceeded a fortnight, and were charmed by its interest and beauty. The impression made upon the visitor by this Gibraltar of America, its giddy heights, its citadel suspended, as it were, in the air, its picturesque steep streets and frowning gateways, and the splendid views which burst upon the eye at every turn, is at once unique and lasting. It is a place, not to be forgotten or mixed up in the mind with other places, or altered for a moment in the crowd of scenes a traveler can recall. Apart from the realities of this most picturesque city, there are associations clustering about it which would make a desert rich in interest. The dangerous precipice along whose rocky front Wolfe and his brave companions climbed to glory, the plains of Abraham, where he received his mortal wound, the fortress so chivalrously defended by Montcalm, and his soldier's grave, dug for him while yet alive, by the bursting of a shell, are not the least among them, or among the gallant incidents of history. That is a noble monument to, and worthy of 2 great nations, which perpetuates the memory of both brave generals, and on which their names are jointly written. The city is rich in public institutions and in Catholic churches and charities, but it is mainly in the prospect from the site of the old government house, and from the citadel, that its surpassing beauty lies. The exquisite expanse of country, rich in field and forest, mountain height and water, which lies stretched out before the view, with miles of Canadian villages, glancing in long white streaks, like veins along the landscape, the motley crowd of gables, roofs, and chimney tops in the old hilly town immediately at hand, the beautiful St. Lawrence sparkling and flashing in the sunlight, and the tiny ships below the rock from which you gaze, whose distant rigging looks like spiders' webs against the light, while casks and barrels on their decks dwindle into toys, and busy mariners become so many puppets. All this, framed by a sunken window in the fortress, and looked at from the shadowed room within, forms one of the brightest and most enchanting pictures that the eye can rest upon. In the spring of the year, vast numbers of emigrants who have newly arrived from England or from Ireland pass between Quebec and Montreal on their way to the backwoods and new settlements of Canada. If it be an entertaining lounge, as I very often found it, to take a morning stroll upon the quay at Montreal, and see them grouped in hundreds on the public wharfs about their chests and boxes, it is matter of deep interest to be their fellow passenger on one of these steamboats, and mingling with the concourse, see and hear them unobserved. The vessel in which we returned from Quebec to Montreal was crowded with them, and at night they spread their beds between decks, those who had beds, at least, and slept so close and thick about our cabin door that the passage to and fro was quite blocked up. They were nearly all English, from Gloucestershire the greater part, and had had a long winter passage out, but it was wonderful to see how clean the children had been kept, and how untiring in their love and self-denial all the poor parents were. Can't as we may, and as we shall to the end of all things, it is very much harder for the poor to be virtuous than it is for the rich, and the good that is in them shines the brighter for it. In many a noble mansion lives a man, the best of husbands and of fathers, whose private worth in both capacities is justly lauded to the skies. But bring him here, upon this crowded deck. Strip from his fair young wife her silken dress and jewels, unbind her braided hair, stamp burly wrinkles on her brow, pinch her pale cheek with care and much privation, array her faded form in coarsely patched attire, let there be nothing but his love to set her forth, or deck her out, and you shall put it to the proof indeed. So change his station in the world, that he shall see in those young things who climb about his knee, not records of his wealth and name, but little wrestlers with him for his daily bread, so many poachers on his scanty meal, so many units to divide his every sum of comfort, and farther to reduce its small amount. In lieu of the endearments of childhood in its sweetest aspect, heap upon him all its pains and wants, its sicknesses and ills, its fretfulness, caprice, and querulous endurance. Let its prattle be, not of engaging infant fancies, but of cold, and thirst, and hunger. And if his fatherly affection outlive all this, and he be patient, watchful, tender, careful of his children's lives, and mindful always of their joys and sorrows, then send him back to Parliament, and pulpit, and to quarter sessions, and when he hears fine talk of the depravity of those who live from hand to mouth, and labor hard to do it, let him speak up, as one who knows, and tell those holders forth that they, by parallel with such a class, should be high angels in their daily lives, and lay but humble siege to heaven at last. Which of us shall say what he would be, if such realities, with small relief or change all through his days, were his? Looking round upon these people, far from home, houseless, indigent, wandering, weary with travel and hard living, and seeing how patiently they nursed and tended their young children, how they consulted ever their wants first, then half supplied their own, what gentle ministers of hope and faith the women were, how the men profited by their example, and how very, very seldom even a moment's petulance or harsh complaint broke out among them. I felt a stronger love and honor of my kind come glowing on my heart, and wished to God there had been many atheists in the better part of human nature there, to read this simple lesson in the book of life. Asterisk, 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 we left Montreal for New York again, on the 30th of May, crossing to La Prairie, on the opposite shore of the St. Lawrence, in a steamboat. We then took the railroad to St. John's, which is on the brink of Lake Champlain. Our last greeting in Canada was from the English officers in the pleasant barracks at that place, a class of gentlemen who had made every hour of our visit memorable by their hospitality and friendship, and with Rule Britannia sounding in our ears, soon left it far behind. But Canada has held, and always will retain, a foremost place in my remembrance. Few Englishmen are prepared to find it what it is. Advancing quietly, old differences settling down, and being fast forgotten, public feeling and private enterprise alike in a sound and wholesome state, nothing of flesh or fever in its system, but health and vigor throbbing in its steady pulse. It is full of hope and promise. To me who had been accustomed to think of it as something left behind in the strides of advancing society, as something neglected and forgotten, slumbering and wasting in its sleep the demand for labor and the rates of wages, the busy quays of Montreal, the vessels taking in their cargoes and discharging them, the amount of shipping in the different ports, The commerce, roads, and public works, all made the last. The respectability and character of the public journals, and the amount of rational comfort and happiness which honest industry may earn, were very great surprises. The steamboats on the lakes, in their conveniences, cleanliness, and safety, in the gentlemanly character and bearing of their captains, and in the politeness and perfect comfort of their social regulations, are unsurpassed even by the famous Scotch vessels, deservedly so much esteemed at home. The inns are usually bad, because the custom of boarding at hotels is not so general here as in the States, and the British officers, who form a large portion of the society of every town, live chiefly at the regimental messes. But in every other respect, the traveler in Canada will find as good provision for his comfort as in any place I know. There is one American boat, the vessel which carried us on Lake Champlain, from St. John's to Whitehall, which I praise very highly, but no more than it deserves, when I say that it is superior even to that in which we went from Queenston to Toronto, or to that in which we traveled from the latter place to Kingston, or I have no doubt I may add to any other in the world. This steamboat, which is called the Burlington, is a perfectly exquisite achievement of neatness, elegance, and order. The decks are drawing rooms, the cabins are boudoirs, choicely furnished and adorned with prints, pictures, and musical instruments. Every nook and corner in the vessel is a perfect curiosity of graceful comfort and beautiful contrivance. Captain Sherman, her commander, to whose ingenuity and excellent taste these results are solely attributable, has bravely and worthily distinguished himself on more than one trying occasion. Not least among them, in having the moral courage to carry British troops, at a time during the Canadian Rebellion, when no other conveyance was open to them. He and his vessel are held in universal respect, both by his own countrymen and ours. And no man ever enjoyed the popular esteem, who, in his sphere of action, won and wore it better than this gentleman. By means of this floating palace we were soon in the United States again, and called that evening at Burlington, a pretty town, where we lay an hour or so. We reached Whitehall, where we were to disembark, at 6 next morning, and might have done so earlier, but that these steamboats lie by for some hours in the night, in consequence of the lake becoming very narrow at that part of the journey, and difficult of navigation in the dark. Its width is so contracted at one point, indeed, that they are obliged to warp round by means of a rope. After breakfasting at Whitehall, we took the stagecoach for Albany, a large and busy town, where we arrived between 5 and 6 o'clock that afternoon, after a very hot day's journey, for we were now in the height of summer again. At 7 we started for New York on board a great North River steamboat, which was so crowded with passengers, that the upper deck was like the box lobby of a theater between the pieces, and the lower one like Tottenham Court Road on a Saturday night. But we slept soundly, notwithstanding, and soon after 5 o'clock next morning reached New York, tarrying here only that day and night, to recruit after our late fatigues. We started off once more upon our last journey in America. We had yet 5 days to spare before embarking for England, and I had a great desire to see the Shaker Village, apostrophe which is peopled by a religious sect from whom it takes its name. To this end, we went up the North River again, as far as the town of Hudson, and there hired an extra to carry us to Lebanon, 30 miles distant. And of course another, and a different Lebanon from that village, where I slept on the night of the prairie trip. The country through which the road meandered was rich and beautiful, the weather very fine, and for many miles the Cotskill Mountains, where Rip Van Winkle and the ghostly Dutchman played at ninepins one memorable gusty afternoon, towered in the blue distance, like stately clouds. At one point, as we ascended a steep hill, athwart whose base a railroad, yet constructing, took its course, we came upon an Irish colony. With means at hand of building decent cabins, it was wonderful to see how clumsy, rough, and wretched its hovels were. The best were poor protection from the weather, the worst let in the wind and rain through wide breaches, in the roofs of sodden grass, and in the walls of mud. Some had neither door nor window, some had nearly fallen down, and were imperfectly propped up by stakes and poles. All were ruinous and filthy. Hideously ugly old women and very buxom young ones, pigs, dogs, men, children, babies, pots, kettles, dunghills, vile refuse, rank straw, and standing water, all wallowing together in an inseparable heap, composed the furniture of every dark and dirty hut. Between 9 and 10 o'clock at night, we arrived at Lebanon, which is renowned for its warm baths, and for a great hotel, well adapted, I have no doubt, to the gregarious taste of those seekers after health or pleasure who repair here, but inexpressibly comfortless to me. We were shown into an immense apartment, lighted by 2 dim candles, called the drawing room, from which there was a descent by a flight of steps, to another vast desert, called the dining room. Our bedchambers were among certain long rows of little whitewashed cells, which opened from either side of a dreary passage, and were so like rooms in a prison, that I half expected to be locked up when I went to bed, and listened involuntarily for the turning of the key on the outside. There need be baths somewhere in the neighborhood, for the other washing arrangements were on as limited a scale as I ever saw, even in America. Indeed, these bedrooms were so very bare of even such common luxuries as chairs, that I should say they were not provided with enough of anything, but that I bethink myself of our having been most bountifully bitten all night. The house is very pleasantly situated, however, and we had a good breakfast. That done, we went to visit our place of destination, which was some 2 miles off, and the way to which was soon indicated by a finger post, whereon was painted, to the Shaker Village. Apostrophe, as we rode along, we passed a party of Shakers, who were at work upon the road, who wore the broadest of all broad-brimmed hats, and were in all visible respects such very wooden men, that I felt about as much sympathy for them, and as much interest in them, as if they had been so many figureheads of ships. Presently we came to the beginning of the village, and alighting at the door of a house, where the Shaker manufactures are sold, and which is the headquarters of the elders, requested permission to see the Shaker worship. Pending the conveyance of this request to some person in authority, we walked into a grim room, where several grim hats were hanging on grim pegs, and the time was grimly told by a grim clock which uttered every tick with a kind of struggle, as if it broke the grim silence reluctantly, and under protest. Ranged against the wall, were 6 or 8 stiff, high-backed chairs, and they partook so strongly of the general grimness, that one would much rather have sat on the floor than incurred the smallest obligation to any of them. Presently, there stalked into this apartment, a grim old Shaker, with eyes as hard, and dull, and cold, as the great round metal buttons on his coat and waistcoat, a sort of calm goblin. Being informed of our desire, he produced a newspaper wherein the body of elders, whereof he was a member, had advertised but a few days before, that in consequence of certain unseemly interruptions which their worship had received from strangers, their chapel was closed to the public for the space of 1 year. As nothing was to be urged in opposition to this reasonable arrangement, we requested leave to make some trifling purchases of Shaker goods, which was grimly conceded. We accordingly repaired to a store in the same house, and on the opposite side of the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.